is crushed to left field and out of the stadium. And Jorge Soler hits his 30th home run of the year. And with two outs and nobody on, the Royals get a walk and a two-run home run. And now Jorge Soler, who has a two-run home run tonight, and that is lifted high and deep to left center field. And that is number two for Jorge Soler tonight. And the Royals take a 6-1 lead.
Soler power last night. Jorge Soler with 31 homers now and a couple homers last night. Royals win, snap a 7-game losing streak. They win in Fenway against the Red Sox by a final of 6-2. Ned Yost on his slugger.
He's just putting it all together now. The competitive, he's fighting each and every at bat. Doesn't matter what the score is. If an umpire misses a call, you know, he's competing. You can see. And he's not waiting. He's not waiting to get into a good count. If he gets a good pitch, he's turning it loose. And he's just, putting this whole offensive game together.
Mike Moustakas has a home run record of 38 just a few years ago for the Royals. So there, if he stays healthy, has a chance to set the single-season record for homers in a year for the Royals franchise. During a season, that doesn't mean a lot because you're 41-74. But that is a glimpse of the future. And that's, this is why you don't judge trades too early. And I wouldn't even say right now you say the trade was still the right trade. I think you still got to let it play out a little bit. But when Wade Davis was traded from the Royals to the Cubs for Jorge Soler, and it was a straight-up trade, one for one, and Davis, of course, was an outstanding closer, and the Royals unloaded him because when they tried to pare down their payroll a little bit, they knew their window had closed for the most part, although they kept other guys on board. They got rid of Dyson, and they got rid of Wade Davis that offseason. And Soler came over, and Soler always had power, but he struck out a lot, and he's still relatively young at the time. And so the Royals, this was what they envisioned, a guy that could hit the ball out of the ballpark, drive in runs, and that's what he's doing. But the problem for him was, one, striking out too much, consistency, and then also health. In the first couple of years with the Royals, health has been a major issue. He was off to a decent start last year, mm-hmm. but this year he's put together. I remember in spring training this year, they talked about how he reported camp in great shape. He'd really worked on his game. So he's taken his game to another level, and hopefully he can stay healthy. So this gives you an idea how quickly things can change, because in 2000, was it 16 or 17, the Royals traded Davis away?
That's 17, I think, because he wasn't on the Cubs when they won the World Series, was he?
When they won the World Series?
Was he there?
I was thinking he was.
Because I was thinking it was a year after. I know Zobrist was
It might have been the year after, though, because I remember him pitching in the playoffs for the Cubs.
Yeah.
But let me double.
I'm pretty sure it was a year after they won, so that would have been.
Yeah, it could be.
Because I think he pitched for the
I think
Royals
he was there
16.
With 16, and then they unloaded after 16.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure.
Is what I was thinking as well. So I'll pull that up and confirm it. But it's interesting that here, I'll pull it up and we'll have it. He was with the Royals in 16 and he was traded, so 17.
Yeah,
yep, so that's right.
What I thought, yeah.
Yeah, I think so. Thought so too. Because I remember him pitching for the Cubs in the playoffs, mm-hmm. but the Cubs have made the playoffs multiple years too. So it was Zobrist, of course, that went back to back World Series championships with the Royals in 15. And then, of course, the Royals didn't sign him as a free agent, even though we pled at the time to sign him instead of Alex Gordon. Still stand by that, but anyway.
Yes.
And then the Zobrist won a World Series with the Cubs in 2016. But Wade Davis was traded, I think it was December of 16, January of 17, for Jorge Soler. And right away, people are like, well, this is just crazy. I mean, you got Wade Davis. He was coming off a season with his ERA was 1.87, and Davis had 27 saves. And but there was some concern about Davis's arm a little bit. And I thought, really, at the time, it made some sense. I was kind of in between on the trade. I'm like, oh, you got a young power-hitting outfielder. Who's under team control for a long time. Davis was going to be a free agent at the end of that year. And so now that was in 2017, January 2017. So now 3.5 years later, in essence, not even would be 17, 18, not even 3 years later.
Yeah.
Wade Davis was just kicked out of this closer position with the Colorado Rockies. He's basically been benched as their closer.
Mm-hmm.
And Jorge Soler is hitting the ball 465 feet and hitting over 30 homers this season and could hit over 40 for the Royals. So for all those people that after that first season when the Cubs made the playoffs and Wade Davis, he saved 32 games for the Cubs, ERA of 2.30, and everybody's like, well, and the Royals bullpen wasn't good in 17, and what are we doing? And Soler's hurt. And everybody just said it was a horrible trade. Bad trade, bad trade, bad trade. This is why you don't judge a trade right then and there. You have an initial feeling about it. You think you've got a good deal, but you got to really judge a trade, and this is what people, and this is what's really funny. All these sports media outlets and all these stories you see on CBS Sports, ESPN, Fox, or whatever, like to grade out trades as soon as they happen. But they don't 5 years later go back and then officially grade it, because that's what you really need to do. But apparently that's out of sight, out of mind. But let's 2.5 years later, you've gone from Davis was a dominant closer and Soler was injury prone, and you're like, okay, is this what, this was a bad trade. To now, you look at the trade and you say, oh, Wade Davis, declining player at the age of 33, ERA of 6.61 with Colorado, and he has all kinds of control issues now. He's walked 20 and 32 innings. Big reason why he's been benched as a Colorado Rockies closer. And Jorge Soler is hitting the cover off the ball. So right now, obviously, the Royals got a great trade, right? Now, see, I will say no, because I'll wait. Because if Soler puts together a couple of years, I'll say yeah. Because the Royals would have only had Wade Davis for that 1 year. I don't think they were going to re-sign him to a long-term deal.
No.
So they would have 1 year of Davis in 17, when the Royals' window had closed. I mean, let's be honest.
Oh, yeah.
So that, was it really going to do the Royals a lot of good to have a dominant closer in 17? No, but it did, of course, in 15. And then you had Holland in 14. Holland got hurt, and then Davis took over in 14, 15. So the Royals had multiple guys. Well, no, Holland was pitching the playoffs in 14, but he messed up his arm, as we know, then in 15. So yeah. Davis took over as a closer. The Royals had dominant closers in 14 and 15. But in 17, they didn't need it. So they traded a pitcher that was only going to be under control for that one season in 17 for a guy under control for 5-6 seasons. And they got a younger guy, and Davis was an older guy with more wear and tear on his body in regards to his arm and everything else. And at the time, it made sense to me. But people are going, oh, my God, what a horrible trade. Well, now those same people, are they coming out saying, what a nice job by Dayton Moore? Of course they're not. They probably forgot who the heck the Royals traded Soler for or got Soler for. But it is amazing within 2.5 years how quickly things can change. Wade Davis is out as a closer. His ERA is almost 7. And Jorge Soler is hitting the ball like an all-star. Now, he still strikes out a lot. His batting average isn't great. But Soler's numbers, 31 homers, and I'd have to pull up his RBI total. This suddenly looks like an unbelievable trade that finally Dayton Moore got one right.
Yeah, it's like a...
But if Soler gets hurt tomorrow and never plays again for the Royals, then we could go back to, that was kind of a wash.
Yeah.
Right?
And I feel like right now the trade's a wash. You know?
I do,
like,
too.
Because, yeah, it was this guy, like you said, I mean, he's going to have to either get hurt or have a pretty big slump here as far as home runs are concerned over the last month and a half, 2 months of the season to not break the Royals' record and to not be the first Royal to get to 40 home runs.
Right.
Okay, so, but at the same time, like you say, he's doing it on a team that is doing nothing.
30 games under 500.
Yeah. It's like, so, and if you had Wade Davis the last 2 years instead of Jorge Soler, he's doing it on a team that's not doing much of anything because they can't get to their closer.
No. You would have won a few more games.
It's like Ian Kennedy's a pretty good closer this year.
Right.
I mean, he's doing a fine job at the position, I think. Right. They can't get to him half the time because they're so far down and so far out of it that he doesn't even need to pitch and close. You know, that was not the case with Greg Holland and Wade Davis in 14 and 15. They were legitimately having to go out there and close games on a regular basis. And so what's the point in having Wade Davis on the team in 17 and 18 and now 19 if you're not going to be able to get to him? So you got to look at that as part of the trade, too. And when you look into the future and see how those teams played.
Yeah.
You didn't need Wade Davis.
No.
Like, you're going to spend the money to keep him and not even have him get, like, 22 save opportunities in the whole season?
Well, it's kind of like when I remember when Jared Allen was traded from the Chiefs, and there was a big uproar. Jared Allen was traded, and he led the league in sacks. What good does that guy do for you when you went 2-14?
Yeah.
Or 4-12, whatever it was. I mean, he wasn't helping him win games. So trade him and they ended up getting Jamal Charles out of that deal.
Yeah.
As a draft pick. So that was the right thing. And I thought at the time it was the right move by the Royals. Now, what I thought later on, they made some mistakes as to hanging on to guys a little bit too long and so forth and so on and not turning the page soon enough. But they did with Wade Davis. And right now you have to say that Dayton Moore is maybe, you know, not stupid. But you can't judge a guy stupid just the first day after the trade was made.
Yeah.
You got to let it play out to really, truly judge it. Soler, 31 home runs in 115 games. He's on pace to hit 44 homers. Of course, that would break the single-season franchise record of 38 set by Moustakas 2 years ago. This is the most home runs hit by an outfielder for the Royals since Jermaine Dye hit 33 in 2000. And guess what? You know what? Do you know what Soler's previous season high in home runs was in his career?
I want to say like 16 or something.
12.
12, really?
12. Exactly.
Was that last year?
No,
I didn't know how many he had before he got hurt.
That was in 2016 over a course of 86 games. Last year, he had 9 before he got hurt.
And I knew he had a fair amount, was maybe on pace to do it last year, too.
He wasn't. 9 homers in 61 games.
Okay, so I didn't know how many
he was not on pace for that. He would have hit about 25, probably.
Yeah.
I mean, it's fun to watch a guy doing this, especially when you have not a lot to cheer for. That's when you're a Royals fan.
You're watching to see if Witt can lead the league in hits and if Jorge can lead the Royals and set the new single-season home run.
And Mondesi was healthy.
The only reason
stolen
watching.
Bases, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
Right.
And he's not playing right now.
Right, exactly.
So.
That's what I'm saying. Soler, 27 and years of age. He has 31 homers and 79 RBIs through 115 games. Batting average is up to .253, which batting average isn't everything, of course, but it is impressive what Jorge Soler has done. But at the same time, it's not. Did it help the Royals win a game last night? Oh, well, absolutely it did. But, you know, over the course of the whole year, no. But this is a guy that maybe you can build around for the future. In regards to Soler, he is under team control through 2021. So two more years after this year. Arbitration, he's eligible in 2021. And he's not making a ton. He signed a 9-year, $30 million contract with the Cubs, which at the time was pretty gutsy by the Cubs. That's how highly they thought of him at the age of 20. So he's only $4 million next year and the year after, and then arbitration, or this year and next year, and then arbitration 2021. So at the age of 30, he'd be an unrestricted free agent. So the Royals better enjoy him for the next 2 years or a year and a half and trade him at the deadline in 2021. So not under contract quite as long as I thought, but still, I mean, they got him in 17, so they had five years of team control.
I was pretty sure it was five when they got him. Yeah,
5 years of team control.
So, yeah, it feels like it's not as long to have him since he's not played a lot the first 2 years he was there, you know, or how much you would want him to play at the level you want him to in those 2 years either.
It's fun to watch when he hits the ball that far, that's for sure. Still shaking my head that he wasn't in the home run derby. That would have been exciting for Royals fans to actually care about the All-Star game. Other than the Witt coming in as a defense replacement, getting a couple of bats, that'd been fun to see Soler in the home run derby. I would have tuned in for
it. You would have fared a little bit better than Moustakas did, too.
Yeah.
Just a different type of hitter.
No doubt about it. So the Royals, they do win last night 6-2 thanks to Soler. Jacob Junis has been pitching well lately. So he gets his 7th win of the season. Bad news, Danny Duffy is a hamstring strain. He runs a lot before games and sprints on the field. Apparently he aggravated his hamstring by doing that. Only happens to teams that lose. He's on the 10-day IL. Jorge Lopez will more than likely make his start in Duffy's place later this week. So tonight it is Glenn Sparkman on the hill for KC versus Rodriguez, who has a record of 13-5. And the Royals will go to Detroit, which leads me to a Major League Baseball team that owes their fans a refund. You think the Royals are bad? The Tigers are 33-77. But here's the kicker. Luckily, yesterday, a doubleheader against the White Sox at home in Detroit, and the Tigers won the nightcap last night. Do you know how many home games the Tigers have won in their last 36 home contests? Out of 36 games, what do you think their record is? In 36 games, their last 36 home games, what do you think their record is?
I'm going to say 7-29.
You're being generous.
Really?
They've only won 5.
Wow.
They were 4-31 in their last 35 games until they won last night in the second game. So 5-31 in the last 36 games. Think about that for a second. You pay for tickets to go watch the Royals. Just put it for whatever team you have, the Rockies or Royals. And so you go to the game, you're like, Mom, they never win when I go. Oh, yeah, they do. No, seriously, they never win at home. Literally, once a month, they win. That's it, at home. That is unbelievably god-awful.
That's
5-31. That is hard to do.
Like, at home.
Like, wow.
You.
So guess what? The Royals are going to Detroit starting tomorrow, and they'll probably get swept.
Probably so, yeah. Red Sox are on an 8-game losing streak. Well, yeah, we're on a 6-game losing streak. We'll do you one better.
Right, exactly.
Yeah, they'll probably go in and get swept. So it'll be 8-31 after.
They have four games in Detroit.
9-31, yeah.
Yeah, there'll be. It'll be 9-31. They'll have a 5-game winning streak at home after being 4-31. Don't you think the Detroit Tigers should do something kind of cool for their fans? Like, I don't know, a free beer, a free beverage for anybody that's sitting through that.
Free Dippin'
to lose.
Dots for yeah. the kids.
give them a voucher for a free anything, one item at the concession stand.
Yeah.
Or free attendance to a game. I don't know, credit their season account.
Yeah.
36 last 36 home games, they've won 5.
Yeah, they
thought the Royals were having a tough year.
They definitely need to do something for their season ticket holders, for sure.
Oh, yeah.
You know, maybe not all the fans just who want to come to the game, but definitely for your season ticket holders. Get them something, get them a beer if they're over 21, definitely.
If they want it, yeah.
If you got anything stronger there, give them that.
You wonder why Kansas is starting to serve beer at football games? It's about 5 years too late, more than likely. But, hey, yeah, we were talking about mental health the other day, and, you know, we were really serious about it. And Max is a big KU fan, and he sent me a text. And, of course, it was pretty funny to lighten the mood when I read it. He said, where was my helpline during KU football?
Yeah.
There should have been a helpline for KU football. Maybe there still should be. But there is good news about KU football, and that's where we segue into next, is that even though the season opener is a little over 3 weeks away, KU football might have picked up one of its most significant wins of the year. Brennan Scott is a 4-star Dallas linebacker in the 2020 class. He announced his verbal commitment to KU via his personal Twitter account last night. He chose the Jayhawks over Texas, USC, Auburn, and Oregon. KU receivers coach and Dallas native Emmett Jones played a crucial role in swaying Scott over those programs. Scott is listed by rivals 6'2", 233. He's a linebacker entering his senior year, and this puts him already as KU's 9th best football recruit since 2000. He could very well be a program-changing player, especially a guy that could anchor the defense for 4 years. Of course, you can be a little bit skeptical of all this because it is a verbal commitment. It's just a verbal pledge. And do keep in mind it's not official until he would sign on the dotted line in December. And just to give you an idea, case in point, this past weekend, linebacker Kershawn Fisher backed out of his pledge with KU after he declared himself 100% committed to Kansas earlier this summer. Or no, 1,000% committed is what he said. So apparently there's more than 1,000% because obviously that's not true. So KU's had a few pretty good recruits, especially Puka Williams, of course, was a great recruit they got. Of course, he's had some issues off the field, as we know. But this is a big get for KU if he follows through and signs on dotted line. He had listed his 5 finalists, and KU wasn't even one of them. And then yesterday he says he's going to KU.
Yeah.
That's pretty weird. You don't see that very often.
No.
So KU's feeling pretty good about that. K-State football. We talked with Riley Gates, Go Powercat, GoPowercat.com yesterday about K-State, and they have access now, a lot more access, the media does, and Go Powercat, which gives us a little bit more information from Riley to pass on to you, our favorite listener, if you're a K-State fan, about K-State football. And Riley was on yesterday, and there's been a lot of talk about a lack of depth at receiver with Risen, of course, not on the team, and Zuber transferring out. There's concern maybe at running back. You don't have Alex Barnes anymore. There's all kinds of talk about Skylar Thompson's going to be the man, but who's he going to throw the ball to? But what really hasn't been talked about, the defense hasn't been talked about a ton, but one thing that really hasn't been talked about is the K-State offensive line going into the season. I asked Riley about it yesterday, and here's what he had to say about the K-State offensive line and their depth.
I think the offensive line is one of the most untalked about positions this offseason, and actually I'm feeling pretty good about where the offensive line is at, and we just haven't had a chance to speak to Connor Riley since the end of the spring, really. And, you know, in spring ball, he was still learning. He was still trying to figure out who he had, what he had on that front, and what he could do with it. Now he has a better idea. We know that they like Scott France. We know that they like Adam Holtorf, those two returners at left tackle and at center, respectively. And then you also have Tyler Mitchell, a returning starter, at the left guard. So that entire left side of the line is tied down. And, you know, at times I felt like Tyler could have been a little bit better, a little bit sharper, but I think he definitely has that experience under his belt now that he needs to kind of go out and make this a good final season. But I was really impressed with the way that Adam and Scott were playing towards the end of last year. And I thought that they just got a little bit overshadowed because of the Dalton Risner show. You know, I mean, it's when you have a second-round NFL draft pick on your roster, it's tough to get any of your other offensive linemen any love.
Yeah.
And so I'm not really concerned about the offensive line as a whole. I'm concerned. I'm concerned about right tackle because, you know, Nick Kaltmeyer did come in the Cactus Bowl a few years back, started and made the ESPN All-Bowl team. So we know he has the talent, and we know that Josh Revis, who's probably going to be that right guard, got some time last year, but we just haven't seen those two consistent enough to really make a judgment. You know, hey, can you lean on that right side of the line heavy? Can you trust that the right side of the line is going to be just as strong as the left? And if you're K-State, you can't constantly pound the left side because then teams are just going to overload that side and shut that one down. So the right side of the line is a concern for me, and then also the depth. You know, I think they have guys there. I think they have bodies they could put in, but they don't have the experienced bodies, and I don't care how good of a player you are. You need that time on the field and in the system to really know what it's all about. I mean, it just takes time to put with every player in college football.
That was Riley. If you missed our interview with Riley Gates, our Wildcat Insider, we have him on every single Tuesday to talk K-State athletics. It is available on our podcast page, our sports ticket page, kittycountry94.com, and also on social media via tweets and Facebook. So Riley talking about the offensive line. I think that is a question for Kansas State, no doubt about it. I think there's certainly questions at receivers we talked about. There's a lot of unknowns at running back. Defensively, I think there's some concerns, but you're also there's got to be concerns with your coaching staff from the standpoint that they're brand new.
Yeah.
You know what? How are they going to adjust to play to being in a Power Five conference? So, the thing about the unknown is that it's sometimes scary, but it's also exciting because you don't know what's going to happen, and so sometimes we always want to we want to know the unknown. Well, eventually we'll find out if K-State's going to be any good. We'll find out if they've got good running backs. We'll find out if they got receivers that can catch the ball. We'll find out if Skylar Thompson is legitimately a top-flight quarterback with nobody, you know, behind him he's got to look over his shoulder at. We're going to find out what kind of coaching staff this is. We're going to find out Coach Klieman can coach at this level. There's lots of questions for Kansas State football, and yet at the same time, I think some of those answers can be very, very exciting.
Listen, as a K-State fan, I could sit here and say I'm a little bit, you know, weary going into the season because you don't, like you said, you don't know what's going to happen. There's so many positions that you've lost everything. You know, the other day I'm looking at the stats, and I probably knew this, but I maybe had forgotten it. Skylar Thompson's the only player returning that had an actual registered carry in a football game last year. He's it. That's it. And so that kind of makes you think, oh, no, that's not good. But at the same time, I'm excited about it. I'm excited to see what these guys can do because it's something different and it's something new and fresh. And that's what excites me about it, just to see what you can do. So I try not to focus on, you know, what might be the negatives of it with all the receivers leaving too, whether by choice or by basically being booted from the team, whatever. You know, all that stuff goes into it and goes into your mind, but at the same time I'm looking forward to it. I'm ready to see what this staff can do.
Yeah.
And what's different about Chris Klieman compared to Bill Snyder. We've already seen a lot of that just off the field stuff. But I want to see what when they go between the lines on August 31st against Nichols, I want to see where they're at, what this coaching staff can do. And that's going to be your first example and your first chance to see it, and I'm looking forward to it. I'm really looking forward to it.
Well, it's exciting, and you know, I remember when Ron Prince came in, it was exciting, and he was a great salesman, said all the right things, and of course that didn't go very well.
No.
And then there's also times when guys come in that you don't think a lot of, like Roy Williams, when he followed Larry Brown, Kansas is like, we got a guy who has no head coaching experience. What are we doing here? It turned out pretty good. So you just got to let it play out, like we talked about with the trades. When you try to judge trades in professional sports, you don't know the day you make the trade that it's going to be an unbelievable trade. You just don't. You might have a strong feeling, but things can change all of that. I've said this, and KU fans might not like me when I say this, but, you know, Les Miles was hired at Kansas. Les Miles has won a national championship. He's been in a Power Five conference. He's been successful at Oklahoma State. He's been successful at LSU. And Kansas State hired a guy that's won a whole bunch of national championships, but at a lower level. Never coached at this level in Division One, let alone a Power Five. And yet, I don't know. There's something tells me strongly in my body, and I may be completely wrong, and KU fans are hoping I'm wrong when I say this, but of the two guys that were hired to do the job, I think K-State's going to be better off 10 years from now based on their hire than KU is. And that doesn't mean that KU won't be improved, because the goal for KU is to turn it around and build a decent program. And I think Les Miles, as long as he stays there 5 years, which I still wonder if he'll be there 5 years, but if he is, I think Les Miles will make KU respectable. I think he'll be a good hire. You're getting guys to commit, even at least verbally, they're 4 stars from Dallas, which they weren't getting that with David Beatty. So that's already a step in the right direction. So I like where KU is going. I like that, Les Miles seems to be, I think all in, which they need him to be. And KU will improve. But will KU be a better football program than K-State 7-10 years from now? And if you had to bet, which program is going to be in better shape? And what I mean by that is, who's finishing higher in the standings in the Big 12? Who's maybe going to bigger bowl games? And who's beating each other head-to-head more often? And it might be dead even. The next 10 years, K-State, KU might split. It might be pretty much that KU is respectable there where K-State is now. KU might get to 6-6, 5-7, 7-5. K-State last year is 5-7. That might be where KU peaks out, 7-5, 8-4. And K-State's going to stay in that same realm. And they'll be very similar. And 10 years from now, you can go back, play the tape, and say, hey, Wade, you weren't really wrong. You really weren't right. They were both solid hires that did an admirable job. But something tells me that Kansas State's going to be better off 10 years from now because of this hire than KU because of the Les Miles hire. And what I mean by that is I think K-State's going to be in a better shape as a program. I should say this. I think K-State will be the better program 10 years from now than KU in football. But KU will be certainly improved.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm trying to say here?
For sure.
I think K-State will be improved from what they had here at the end of the Bill Snyder era. I think Chris Kleiman was a good hire. I may be dead wrong on this. I thought Turner Gill was a good hire initially at KU, and I was dead wrong on that. So, take it for what it's worth, okay? But we also said Charlie Weiss was a horrible hire, and he was. Sometimes you get it right, sometimes you get it wrong. But I just feel like Chris Kleiman is a long-term fit at K-State. I don't think he's going anywhere if he does a really good job.
Not by choice.
No. Yeah. Now, if he's fired, yeah. But I'm assuming he does a good job.
That's because
I think he will.
Yeah.
If he does a good job, he's going to be there. And in 10 years from now, KU might be on their third coach after Les Miles, or second coach after Les Miles. And that's because we don't know if Les Miles is going to stay there for the full length of his 5-year contract. So I think both hires were good. They're both in kind of different situations. KU's trying to rebuild from the ground up, basically, and they got to get a name, and they did, and they got the sexy hire. Sometimes I feel like Les Miles is a little bit of a car salesman. I know offense to car salesman out there, but I just feel like he's selling us more, whereas Chris Kleiman is just going to work. Does that make sense?
100%.
Yeah.
I feel like if Chris Kleiman does the things he needs to do and wins the amount that he needs to win, I completely agree. I think 10 years from now, on your target of what you're talking about, he will still be the coach at K-State. So I don't feel like him or Gene Taylor are guys that really want to leave where they're at right now for better, greener pastures in somebody else's eyes, but not theirs. I feel that way 100%, and it is. I mean, Les Miles is Les Miles. He's a name. He's a product. He's his own brand, completely, to be completely honest.
And you got
to
sell tickets
because
you've had such a bad program. So that hire does make sense. I'm not saying it's a bad hire.
But
it's a different situation.
Yeah, definitely. And Chris Kleiman doesn't have to as much lean on all of his national championships because he knows that that's at a lower level. But he's got work to do. If he wants to do that at this level, like he did it at the other level, I think he's got more motivation, too.
Oh, I totally agree.
Because he's not won at this level unless Miles has.
Unless Miles has all kinds of money in the bank.
And he's got so much more motivation, too, and that's why you're seeing that right now, that he's hitting the ground running. He's pretty active in what he's doing right now. The other day he says, I didn't even know the media was here at practice. I'm so focused on what I'm doing right now that I let Kenny take care of that, and we do this. We take care of what we need to do. And I think that, like I said, we're not saying Les Miles isn't taking care of what he needs to do, that he's not being proactive, and that he's not making this team better, because I'm fairly confident he has already made them better.
Right.
But at the same time, there's a difference of how you're seeing the process evolve here with both of these programs.
Two different processes. And the other thing I would say is that Les Miles, there's no pressure. There's absolutely no pressure on Les Miles. First of all, he's already won a national championship. So if his goal was, I'm coming to Kansas to win a national championship, okay, it's unrealistic. Now, maybe he will. But he already has it in the bank.
Yeah.
So it's kind of like Alex Gordon. I'll give you an example. Alex Gordon, if he was chasing the ring, he might be willing to be traded at the trade deadline to go to a contender and win a ring. But he already has one with the Royals. So why not end his whole career with the Royals? Be a Royal for life. That's pretty cool to end your career that way. Les Miles can go to Kansas, win 7-8 games, and he's going to be heralded as one of the best coaches that ever coached at KU, turning around a doormat. I mean, there's nowhere to go but up for Kansas football. Whereas, and he's following David Beatty, and Chris Kleiman's following a legend.
Yeah.
There's a lot more pressure on Chris Kleiman. There's a lot more motivation for Chris Kleiman because of, one, what you just said, and on top of it, I'm following the shoes of Bill Snyder, and the last guy that followed Bill Snyder, it didn't work out so well. There's a whole bunch of pressure there. Whereas KU, it's like, you know, if Les Miles goes out and they go 2-10, it's no big deal because we're more competitive. We might be like Nebraska last year. Nebraska had the same record they did as Mike Riley did the year before. Scott Frost's first year was the same record as Mike Riley the year before. So why wasn't Scott Frost fired? Well, because it's a process. You had to weed out the guys that you didn't like, didn't fit the culture, so forth and so on. Well, Les Miles will probably do the same thing this year. Already done it somewhat. Yeah. And Les Miles may end up going 3-9, 2-10. And some fans may think it's a bit of a disappointment. Are they going to want to yell, fire Les Miles? Of course not, because he has a track record. And then he can sit here and go, okay, now I've given myself a little more time to turn this thing around. I'll tell you what sounds really, really weird. One of the worst things that could happen for Les Miles at KU is to go out this year and make a bowl.
Mm-hmm.
Because then all of a sudden, you know how it's going to be. The bandwagon KU fans, and trust me, they're every single school, but they're the ones that were on board and when they won the Orange Bowl and jumped off when they lost 7 in a row and Mangino got fired. You felt the whole collapse of the wagon, including Mangino. So if he goes out and KU wins 6 games this year and they make a bowl, next year, everybody's going to say in year 2 of Les Miles, they should win 7 or 8. And we should now get to a bigger bowl. And they could easily regress. So KU would probably be better off taking a slow but steady step. Like this year, win 4 or 5. Next year, 6 or 7. And step up, up, up. We see this sometimes. We've seen it with the Twins. We've seen it with the Houston Astros before they won a World Series. You suddenly get good after being bad. But then the very next year, now you can't handle expectations because now you're the hunted. You regress and then try to come back. Eventually, the Astros did. And the Twins are doing that this year. So that could easily happen to KU. They might be better than we think this year. And then all of a sudden, here we go. We're bowl eligible next year. And that's not realistic. So for Les Miles, I think for him, not that it's going to matter either way because he's established, as we've already talked about, there's not nearly as much pressure on Les Miles than there is Chris Kleiman.
No, you're right.
There's a lot more motivation Chris Kleiman. Now, that doesn't mean Les Miles won't be the better coach at KU compared to Chris Kleiman. Chris Kleiman might flame out. He might be a control freak. I don't know any of this stuff. I'm just hyperbole here. But he might be a control freak like Bill Snyder, which I don't think he is. Maybe he delegates too much. He can't handle the pressure. He cracks. Win the dang day becomes a big joke 2 years from now, and he's blown out, and Gene Taylor's gone. Football program is in shambles, and they're going to ask Bill Snyder to come back at the age of 90 and resurrect the program again. Who knows? Maybe that could all happen. KU, they might end up, being a Big 12 championship contender, which means you're a playoff contender, which means you're a national championship contender, and you might get them back to the days where Mangino had them ranked second in the country, getting ready for a big game against Missouri at Arrowhead. It could very well go that way. But my crystal ball, which sometimes is very murky, I think Chris Kleiman is going to be a lot better than Ron Prince. I think Chris Kleiman is going to be a long-term fit at K-State. And I know that's saying something because we haven't seen him even play a game yet. Now, if they go out and lose to Nichols, everybody's going to sit here and jump off the wagon. And if KU goes out and loses to Indiana State, there'll be no jumping off the wagon. It'll be just like, we still suck. I mean, what I'm saying? That's the difference. Seriously, that's let's go. Honestly, let's rewind the tape. That's what it comes down to. You think about it. That's a great, great example. It just came to me. If K-State loses to Nichols, that's going to be the sky's falling. If KU loses to Indiana State, it'll be like, we stunk anyway. It takes a little bit of time. It's completely different.
Oh, yeah. There's no question. Yeah. I mean,
but a year from now, they might be in the same boat. They might both be 5-7, and all of a sudden, KU's closed the gap.
Yeah, I mean, it's not that hard. You're a terrible quarter away from being a bowl qualifier last year at K-State. I mean, they had Iowa State on the ropes. You're a quarter away from being a bowl quarterback.
Oh, absolutely.
A bad quarter away from
it. How many close games did you blow?
KU is not.
Baylor, you should have won.
So you're sitting there thinking, you know, okay. Well, yeah, logically, if you make a little bit of improvement, you're already a bowl.
Right.
Headed to a bowl game.
Right.
If you just take care of some of those little issues that you had under Bill Snyder, you're going to a bowl game. KU's not thinking that way.
Okay? No.
You're thinking you take care of how
KU
bad
shouldn't
David
be
Beatty
thinking
was.
Bowl.
No. If you take care of how bad David Beatty was, maybe we get to four wins this year.
Maybe, yeah. Maybe overachieve.
Maybe
five.
You get to five.
Maybe.
So, yeah, this is a complete different
I still don't
mentality.
Know, I still don't know how KU is going to win a lot of games at the quarterback situation. I don't think they have a quarterback still,
yeah.
But... Maybe, you know, here's one thing.
I don't know how good McVitie is. You know,
I don't know either.
He's probably the guy, but.
But go back,
Les
Miles didn't have the greatest quarterbacks at LSU, and what they end up doing, what was the problem for LSU? Scoring points.
Yeah.
Their defense was usually good. Yeah. They couldn't score points. They were unimaginative offensively. They're LSU fans that wanted Les Miles fired 3 or 4 years before he was fired.
Oh, yeah.
Because they were like, all we do is kick field goals. We can't score touchdowns. We don't have any imagination on offense. That's something that's going to be. Something watched very closely KU this year. Les Miles claims when he was coming in, of course, once again, that's a sales pitch, and he might adhere to it, is, you know, we're gonna pass the ball more. We're going to be more open. We're going to run more spread or do this or do that. Are you? Because a lot of times coaches can say that, and guess what? They evolve back to the way they were.
How much different was it going to be last year because Andre Coleman and Colin Klein were young guys that
yeah.
were going to
change
that
any
what
different?
The offense was at K-State? Because Dana Dimel wasn't there anymore.
No, it didn't change.
It was the same.
Right. Of course, Bill Snyder was in charge.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like, you know, you can see, and Bill Snyder even said that we might do some things different or whatever. You know.
We're going to snap the ball.
Like Bill Snyder's offense. How many times did you hear everybody, though, in the offseason be like, it's still Bill Snyder's offense, so you're probably going to see a lot of the same things.
Come on,
and
man.
You did.
Come on, man. It was different. They snapped the ball 2 seconds on the play clock instead of one. It
yeah.
was completely different.
Yeah.
All right, so K-State, there's concerns. There's the unknown. It's going to be fun to watch what they do. I think it's just really, really neat. Neat's not a word that people use anymore, is it? I think it's...
Some people do,
I think it's old people like me. I think it's neat that KU and K-State both have new head coaches the same year.
Yeah.
I just think it's... I'm looking for a better word than neat, but I find it... Oh... I'm kind of mesmerized by it a little bit. I just, there's so much unknown. I think Les Miles this year, KU can go anywhere from two to five games. I think they'll win two non-cons, and they'll be 2-10 or 5-7. That's the range. For K-State, you know, there's so many unknowns with K-State. I don't know why, I just don't see them being worse than 5-7, but maybe it's 4-8. To 7-5. That's the range I see for them.
Yeah.
And I don't know if you agree with that or
not. 7-5 is probably where I'd cap it right
yeah,
now.
Yeah, that's kind of where I'm at too. And KU, I cap them 5-7. Well, if K-State goes 7-5 and KU goes 5-7, KU's already made some major strides. And
yeah.
if it's a close game between them and K-State, then suddenly you'll be sitting there going, Les Miles has closed the gap between KU and K-State. Well, that's kind of easy to do. The gap's always been pretty big for a long time.
Yeah.
So... You got a lot more. You can fill the gap a lot easier when you go from whatever. What did they win? Three games last year.
The gap was only 2 games last year.
Right.
So
if you go from 3 to 5 and K-State 5 to 7, the gap's still the same.
It's
and yet some people will be
yeah.
like, "Well, KU's closer, only because they're a win away from a bowl game."
Yeah.
The numbers can be a little bit misleading.
Oh yeah, without question.
Right. So, I think if KU ended 5-7 this year, a lot of KU fans would love it and take it. And then be competitive in other games where they lose. And I think if K-State went 7-5, then K-State fans would be more than happy with that.
Yeah.
Don't you think?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And go to a bowl game.
Yeah. If you understand the actual head-to-head matchup with the two teams
mm-hmm.
last year, you realize the gap wasn't,
it wasn't very much last
KU
year.
KU did everything they did. And
KU should have won, really.
Should have won.
KU should have won.
And didn't.
And you're right.
The gap is not as big as you thought it was.
It isn't. You're right about that. You're right. Max, big KU fan, you're on the bus thinking bowl, huh? Well, I'll say this. There are some programs, they have so many freaking bowl games
right,
that if they go 5-7, which I said is the top to me, they could very well go to a bowl.
Yeah,
and, with a losing record, it's possible.
KU's not going to be one of those programs that's
going to turn
no
it down
because they didn't get six wins.
No,
but it's interesting that you say that, though. There's so many bowl games now because you know your example that you're talking about. If they do well enough and make a bowl game, and then they regress the next year,
mm-hmm.
that's what happened to Bill Snyder. But he didn't make a bowl game.
Right.
His third year, they went 7-4, and mm-hmm. back then there wasn't as many bowl games.
Right.
So they didn't. They went 7-4, won seven games, didn't even make a bowl game.
Yeah.
And then the next year they were 5-6,
mm-hmm.
and they weren't sniffing it.
Mm-hmm.
And so, but then after that, that's when they really started. I think they went 9-2-1 the next year, and finally made that bowl game and made the Copper. Or they went 9-2, I think, that year, mm-hmm. went to Copper Bowl,
mm-hmm.
And then started, you know, winning a lot of games after that, making bowl games year after year.
There's just a huge benefit to making a bowl game, no matter what your record is, but especially if you're a team, a program trying to build. If KU's 5-7 and they get invited to a bowl game, you take it in a heartbeat.
Oh, yeah.
And then you get all these more practice time to help build your program. I mean, that'd be an unbelievable. I mean, seriously, I say this in all seriousness. I'm not even joking. And there might be some K-State fans going, you guys are all dreaming. KU's never getting to five wins. West Virginia's down. Texas Tech has a new head coach. Iowa State will still be solid. If KU and K-State are close like they were last year, KU could win that game. I just gave you three games in the conference KU could win. And if they win two of their three non-cons, that's five wins.
Yeah.
And if they win all three non-cons, they get two conference wins, that's five wins. And then when you have 1,000 bowls and KU, and there are probably going to be some teams that losing records to make a bowl this year, and KU's 5-7, and Les Miles helps with other teams that are 5-7 to get a bid, trust me, I would think. And KU fans might be ready to open up the coffers and go on a road trip to somewhere somewhat decent, even though their team's 5-7. People are going to look at Les Miles and think he's a freaking football god with a 5-7 record.
Yeah.
Seriously?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. No doubt. It's just, it goes back to what we're saying. It's a different situation for Les Miles than Chris Klieman.
Absolutely.
And like I say, they're not a team that's going to say, no, we don't want your bowl, because you're going to gain everything, any extra time you can get as a team that has struggled in the past with a new coach.
Yeah.
You take it in a heartbeat. And I think that it's not. I agree with you. I don't think it's as far-fetched as what people might think for KU to get to five wins.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
I don't think it's going to happen.
Right.
But it's not like one of the – I'm going to be shocked if Kansas wins five games.
No, I won't be.
Maybe a little bit surprised, but I'm not going to be sitting here saying I'm shocked that KU's winning five games, because, like you said, you got the two teams you mentioned, West Virginia and Texas Tech, and how close they were to K-State the last 2 years, to be honest.
Mm-hmm.
And then you're in Lawrence again against K-State this year.
Yeah.
I'm not going to say they can't win that game against K-State and Lawrence, because they can.
So interesting, too, is that you said you wouldn't be shocked if KU won five games. Would you be shocked if K-State won four or less?
No.
Okay.
Three, I might be shocked.
I would be shocked with three. But yeah, four,
you could have a bad bounce go here or there.
Skylar Thompson gets hurt.
Yeah. You don't have the quarterback that you think.
Receivers aren't very good.
Dalton Schoen gets hurt.
Mm-hmm.
You're already struggling at that position anyway.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, there's just so many things that can go.
Of course, you can have a lot of injuries that can change everything, too.
Yeah, I wouldn't be.
Yeah.
I mean, three would be a definite sky is falling.
If K-State's 3-9, I think if K-State's 3-9, there are going to be a lot of people saying get rid of Klieman after 1 year.
Oh, yeah.
Which I think is insane.
You know, it'll happen, no question.
I don't think any coach should be fired after 1 year, as long as they've done something horribly bad off the field or something. Okay, we end, let's go through a couple nuggets, then we'll end with Jordy Nelson, because it's a pretty cool story. The Chiefs have a training camp, no practice yesterday, practice today. They have a team drill they're running, and Damian Williams didn't play, so he's still battling a hamstring issue, so no teamwork for Damian Williams, it looks like, today. That's what Adam Teicher is reporting. A Chiefs practice is today, and then they'll practice again tomorrow, and then Friday, no practice, and then the preseason game number one, Saturday against the Bengals at Arrowhead. Pre-game, you can hear it on your home for the Chiefs in North Central Kansas, our sister station Z96.3 Lakewood, pregame at 6 and kickoff at 7. I would guess the first string offense will play all of about two series, maybe one. If they go down and score the first drive, that might be it.
If Pat leads them into the end zone on
I
one
think
drive,
be done.
He's definitely out.
I would think so.
I hope he is.
Yeah, me too. Crazy report. Antonio Brown's with the Raiders. And the Raiders are the focus of Hard Knocks on HBO, yeah. Which did that debut last night?
I think it was last night, yeah.
I don't get HBO. I'm too cheap.
Yeah, either.
but I'm sure it's going to be interesting with Gruden and the Raiders, you know, and the Browns was pretty interesting last year with the problems with Hugh Jackson and Todd Haley. I don't think the show is smart for any team to do, but whatever. But Antonio Brown's seen a foot specialist, and there's a little bit of concern about Antonio Brown's feet. Do you know what happened?
I haven't heard, actually.
According to a report from CBS Sports, Antonio Brown's feet were frostbitten from the cryotherapy machine.
Oh, nice.
Can't make this stuff up.
It's a little bit of an adverse effect of that. It's not what you want.
Can't make this stuff up. Okay, we end with Jordy Nelson. He signed with the Packers yesterday. One-day contract to retire as a Packer. Jordy Nelson's career, well, let's just say it's an amazing story when you think about it. It does allow folks to dream. And what I mean by that was, you know, he's a small, you know, 3A school, Riley County, outstanding athlete, not good enough to get a scholarship, at least not at the big level. You know, walks on at K-State, and then they convert him from defense to wide receiver, and then he just absolutely excels. Next thing you know, he's catching passes in the Super Bowl and wins a Super Bowl ring with Aaron Rodgers. And then goes on to have what will be a Packer Hall of Fame career. I don't think he's got enough to be a National Football League Hall of Famer, unfortunately, although his stats are pretty amazing.
If he played three or four more years, would have been Pro Football Hall of Fame.
Absolutely. And Jordy Nelson's career, when you look at his overall stats, he ended his career with 613 receptions. 550 of those were with the Green Bay Packers. Over 8,500 yards, 72 touchdown receptions, and he averaged 14 yards a reception. And then one of his biggest years, of course, was 2011, where he averaged almost 19 yards a catch and 15 touchdowns. He led the league with 14 touchdown catches just recently as 2016. He had years where he caught 98 passes, 97 passes. In fact, here's the three-year run that Dusty was referring to. And if he doesn't tear his ACL, who knows, in preseason with the Packers the 1 year. But Jordy Nelson, in 2013, 85 catches for 1,300 yards. 2014, 98 catches for 1,500 yards. Then, of course, he had to sit out 2015 with the torn ACL. Came back, and all he did was have 97 catches for 1,257 yards and led the league in touchdowns. Pretty impressive career for a guy that wasn't good enough to even get a scholarship at Kansas State or any other Division I university.
Yeah.
Pretty good stuff. He's a family man. Green Bay was a perfect fit, as he's told people yesterday. So let's hear from Jordy Nelson. Let's hear from Aaron Rodgers first, because I thought this was interesting. Aaron Rodgers, I've heard these stories. And in fact, my buddy and I, we went to Nelson's Landing to eat lunch when we went to go golf in Manhattan recently, because he was in town and he likes to golf. And usually him and I do a golf trip, and we didn't get to do it last year. So we went to a couple golf courses when he came down to visit. We stopped at Nelson's Landing, and Nelson's Landing, there's if you haven't been there, it's in Leonardville. Check it out. There's Jordy Nelson stuff all over the walls, and there's some pictures stood out to me, him sitting on the sideline of the Super Bowl with the receivers right next to him, and it's all autographed. Mm-hmm. He's brought back Greg Jennings, Donald Driver, his receivers usually back to the farm. Aaron Rodgers has been to Leonardville. Mm-hmm. He's been on the farm. I've heard some interesting stories. I remember Greg Jennings' story. I think it was Greg Jennings. I don't think it was Driver. I think it was Jennings, that they're artificially inseminating cows. And these guys had to stick their hands in you know where. These are, you know, guys that were from the inner city or whatever. They'd never been on a farm before. And then they're told they're supposed to, here's what you do. You want me to take my hand and do what?
Yeah.
and Jordy never, you know, publicized this stuff. They were very, you know, the family pretty quiet. You know, didn't go around telling everybody, hey, Aaron Rodgers is in town. I've heard a story that somebody said they were there one night and then they looked back and saw Aaron Rodgers in the kitchen and he was hiding. I don't know if that's true or not. I can't verify that. But Aaron Rodgers and Jordy Nelson, no question, are friends. Build a connection. And here's Aaron Rodgers talking about Jordy Nelson and his career as a Green Bay Packer.
Nobody, I think, personified class what it means to be a Packer that I played with more than that guy. You know, he's incredible in the community, obviously a fantastic player. Had that little Barry Sanders to him. You know, he'd score and give the ball to the official. Until his later years, he started spiking kind of on the field sometimes, which we'd love to rib him about. But a lot of great memories together. obviously some corner posts over the years that were pretty fun. Super Bowl memories, you know, my first touchdown pass, big third down in the fourth quarter to set up a winning, what ultimately was a winning score. And then just the little things, you know, just the unspoken connection, the back shoulder throws, the, you know, ability to throw it out to a spot and know he's going to be there. You know, we just kind of always had that little ability to click on the field, and excited about him 4 years. I said, you know, I hope I'm on the short list of guys to introduce him in 4 years for the Packer Hall of Fame.
That'd be cool. That day will come, no question. Loved by the fans. And it's interesting because I had a chance to, his mom, Jordy's mom, was working a few weeks ago when we were at Nelson's Landing for lunch. And I said, how's Jordy like in retirement? And she said, actually, he's like, farming's harder than the NFL. He kind of almost feels like he needs to go back to NFL. It won't be as hard. That's crazy to think that, because NFL is not easy. And the punishment you take and all the work you got to put in, but you know, that also gives you an idea how hard farming can be, too.
Yeah.
And Jordy is a very smart guy. He saved his money. He's a very frugal guy. There's stories I've heard about how you get your per diem as a player on top of you get all the money, which he got a big contract his last one. And he pocketed the per diem. He, like, you know, didn't spend very much of it and saved it.
Get a burger or something or get some food and then
save the money. Right, absolutely. I don't need to have a $20 meal. I'll get $5 worth and pocket 15 or whatever it might be. And you know, he's been very smart in investing and land and so forth and so on. He's not a guy that you got to worry about being broke 10 years from now after his NFL career.
Doesn't
like
seem
Adrian
like
Peterson,
it.
Who's in a world of hurt financially because of some bad things he's done in regards to investing. But Jordy talks about, we heard from Aaron Rodgers, what about Jordy playing with Aaron Rodgers? He talks about how he grew up with Rodgers on the football field.
Time and focus, I think. It's a lot of communication between practice, film room, meetings. And a lot of it was listening my first couple of years when I wasn't playing as much, when he was talking to Donald and Greg and James and Ravel, the guys that kind of taught me a lot. When I came in, I only had played receiver for 3 years, so I had a lot to learn in a very fast period of time and at the highest level. So having those guys was very beneficial. And then listening to their conversations and just trying to absorb. One thing I always tried to do was never have to be told a second time. I mean, if Aaron was talking to Donald or Greg or those guys, I wanted to be able to learn if it was from their mistakes or what they did well, to where he didn't then have to tell me a couple years later. So you kind of just were always growing. So a lot of it's just paying attention and listening and absorbing it, and then having a lot of communication. I mean, we had spent a lot of time together on the field. If it's when the defense was going, we were over there taking a knee, talking about different things, and just trying to see the game the same way he did. I don't know if that's possible, but tried as hard as possible to get there, and it made the game very simple for us. Not easy, but simple, and had that confidence. And when you get that confidence from a quarterback and have that, it makes it go well.
Jordy Nelson on growing up there and working with Aaron Rodgers as a Green Bay Packer in early part of his career, trying to be on the same page. Jordy, you're a small-town kid, obviously, farm boy. Green Bay was really the perfect fit.
Green Bay was a big city to us from where we grew up, but obviously still had the Midwest people, the rural area, allowed us to be comfortable and didn't have the overwhelming transition of going to a ginormous city where we would kind of get lost in it. But it was a great opportunity to spend 10 years here, start our family here. We just moved back to Kansas. I told my oldest that we were moving home. He goes, home to me is Green Bay. I'm like, well, valid. You spent 8 years there, and we're born there. So it's interesting to hear that aspect of it. And then into the football and the organization, the people that were here. I mean, I think I said it the first year I was here, the locker room wasn't what you expected, because the way a lot of guys get portrayed, the way the media focus on certain people and a lot of the negative of it, and then walk in this locker room and you have guys like Charles Woodson and Aaron and Donald who, I mean, they hardly talked and they just worked, and it set the standard, and it was easy to step right into that.
Of course, Jordy loved by the Packer fans, and he talked about that love.
Humbling, kind of surreal. I don't know. It's hard to explain. It's it's still weird. Sometimes we'll go places and we'll get recognized and you wonder how or why they do. But it's fun. It's cool to see it, and it's fun to make those memories and play that way. So I think it just, for me, keeping it simple, I think, is what did it. You know, there wasn't a bunch of extra stuff. Even my last year when the guys convinced me to try to celebrate, it was awkward, and people were wondering what was going on with me. So, but they wanted some more energy on the field, so I tried to help out, and it got out of control. So, yeah, it's fun to see.
See, that wasn't him. Spiking the ball. Yeah. It's like they set him up.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, now you're showboating. Like, you told me to do that. You needed energy for the team. Jordy talks about why he retired as a Packer yesterday.
I mean, when you're part of this organization and the history, and well, Mark reached out to me probably a couple days to a week after I decided to be done playing, and asked if I wanted to do it. So when you get that request, I was very appreciative of that. And honestly, the fans as well. I didn't realize it was such a big deal until I talked to some people that I didn't really know, and they were fans, and they were kind of adamant about it. So that's part of it as well. But I think it's, I mean, I'll be remembered as a Packer. Obviously, I enjoyed my year last year in Oakland, but this is where I started, and it's great to come back and end it that way.
Just to add here, Rodgers and Nelson, that combination, one of the most dynamic duos in NFL history. Together, they racked up almost 7,000 yards receiving from quarterback to receiver, 65 touchdown connections, 324 first downs, a passer rating between Rodgers and Nelson of 124. That number is the highest mark for a quarterback wide receiver duo since 2014. And main reason, they had a relationship. They had a connection, as you heard Aaron Rodgers talk about and you heard Jordy talk about. And that usually is a big key to having success at any level or anything in life, is having relationships like that. And it's pretty cool. And I have honestly never met Jordy in person. He's had autograph sessions here and there. I know Dusty's gone to those, and other people have. But I can tell you, just by hearing his voice, and then by talking to some people that know him or have met him or know him pretty well, and then talking to his mom a couple times when I've been at Nelson's Landing, is that this is a guy that's a guy you cheer for, whether he's a K-Stater or a KU guy. It doesn't matter. Recently, I saw some people, Gary Woodland's a KU guy. I can't cheer for Gary Woodland. He's not a KU guy anymore in regards to he's not going to school mm-hmm. there. He's a good guy that won the U.S. Open. He's representing the state of Kansas. He's from Topeka. So what? He went to Kansas. Come on, K-State fans. You can cheer for this guy. And most I saw say, yeah, I do. And the same thing applies to KU fans. Like, well, Jordy went to K-State. I can't cheer for this guy. No, you can. You absolutely can, because he did it the right way. And he was humble, and you heard Aaron Rodgers mention Barry Sanders, like, you know, hand the ball to the official. He fit in. He wasn't bigger than the game. He can tell he's almost embarrassed to be talking about himself now.
Oh yeah.
You know, because he's not comfortable with that. And when the off season, he doesn't want to be out and about on tons of speaking engagements, although he had to do some of that stuff. He would rather just sit on a tractor and farm. And this is a guy that ended up hitting it big time, that was a walk-on. And the greatest thing is, it's a great example for those young people out there that, hey, you can come from a small school. You know, yeah, it helps to have talent. And Jordy had talent. Let's not act like he just dredged up. I mean, he made his own talent. He had talent. You have to have God-given ability and talent. But he made the most of it. And there's so many times he could have just given up on it. Well, I'm a walk-on. I don't want to go to K-State. I'll go get a scholarship and give up football or sports. Or I'm at K-State. Well, I really want to be DB. I don't want to be wide receiver. I got to learn a whole new position. This might be tough for me. Or I'm going to Green Bay. Okay. There's going to be too much pressure. They're expected to win Super Bowls, and I just hope I make the team instead of I want to be a really great player. So many things. There's a mental makeup, and Jordy Nelson certainly had that, and that whole family. I mean, there's been Kelsey, an outstanding athlete as well. A lot of athleticism in that family. But to go from a small school, a 3A school in Riley County, to a walk-on at K-State, and then to be an outstanding player at K-State in the Big 12, and then to go on. And I remember when he was drafted, I was like, there was no doubt in my mind he was going to be really good.
Oh.
When the Packers drafted him, I was like, they're getting a steal. And when the Seahawks got Tyler Lockett, I thought, that's why I wanted the Chiefs to draft him, because I thought that would be a steal. You know, certain guys, you know their makeup, you know their work ethic, you know their backgrounds. And Jordy Nelson, you know, that's why I always felt like Peyton Manning, Ryan Leaf at that time. I was like, Peyton Manning is the surest thing you're ever going to get mm-hmm. to a quarterback. And that's what he turned out to be, without question. Jordy Nelson just is the type of guy that you want your kids to look up to as a role model.
Yeah, I mean, if you looked at what Jordy did his last year at K-State, I mean, he was outstanding, one of the two best receivers in the country. Him and Michael Crabtree were both unanimous All-Americans first team. And they're from the same conference, obviously. But when you saw some of the catches, you know, the one that I always remember at K-State was he's dragging across the middle and reaches way back, I think with his off left hand.
Mm-hmm.
It's like 3 yards behind him, reels it in and pulls it in and then goes for like a 20-yard run after catch.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just like some of the things he was doing there, you could tell. And Jordy wasn't a first-round pick probably because of his 40 time. I still say that to this day.
Oh, yeah.
And but people don't understand what he did when people were chasing him. And I, you know, they had a big highlight video yesterday that NFL shared on Facebook. And once he caught that football, it didn't matter how fast that defensive back was. If he was far enough into the open field, you weren't catching him. That 4.640 that he ran didn't mean anything. Okay, it meant absolutely nothing. And so that's one of the things I've always appreciated about Jordy, too, is that he worked hard to get where he was at. He just didn't sit back. And, you know, I posted on Facebook yesterday, I said, for the kids in small schools, small towns, don't let anybody tell you what you can and can't do.
Exactly.
So if you have that drive, if you have that, you have to have the ability, obviously, you have to, but you also have to have the drive and the passion
sure.
to want to get better. Because
mm-hmm.
like I said, this is a guy that walked on as a safety at K-State
mm-hmm.
and for a 2-3 year period was probably the best receiver in the NFL.
Mm-hmm.
And he was the most consistent. He was most reliable at times, all mm-hmm. the time.
Sure.
What Aaron Rodgers was talking about there, I've never seen a guy that can toe the sideline
mm-hmm.
is better. There's other people that can do it.
Sure.
But it's better than making those like those on off shoulder catches too
mm-hmm.
and coming back behind his body to make sure he's got himself in position.
Right.
People don't make those catches a lot. You know, those are he was a possession receiver, but he was a deep threat too.
Yeah, he was.
He could do everything that you needed a wide receiver to do mm-hmm. in the NFL. Absolutely everything.
Wasn't afraid to go over the middle, get that third down, big catch, take a hit.
No matter what you needed him to do, he was going to do it for you.
That's why I don't like the combines. I mean, I understand some of the numbers that they put together. Oh, you bench this, you squat this, you jump this high, you run this fast. But you think about it, and you'd have to pull up the list of the top receivers of all time. But I can think of two right off the top of my head. Jerry Rice and Steve Largent weren't fast.
No.
Two of the greatest receivers and two of the hardest working guys that have ever played National Football League and two of the smartest guys.
Yeah.
And Jordy Nelson, to me, is in that group. I know he doesn't have the numbers as those guys have, but he's made from the same mold from the standpoint of he doesn't have that blazing speed in regards to a combine, but put a helmet and pads on them, they're going to make plays and be the ultimate teammate and going to work their butt off and have a motivation, an inner drive to be the best they can be. Steve Largent was that way. Jerry Rice was that way. And no doubt Jordy Nelson was that way.
I mean, if you have the ability to run a route the right way and the ability to shake off a defender and get yourself in the right spot, you don't need Tyreek Hill speed to get to the end zone after you've done all that.
No.
And that's what Jerry Rice was. I mean, he had the ability to do everything on the field, get where he needed to be, and by the time he was there, it didn't matter if he had 4.2 speed or 4.9 speed, he was already ahead of everybody and was going to score,
right.
you know, on those big-time plays. And that's, you know, that's what I liked about Jordy and about all those other two that you mentioned is everybody thinks you have to have Tyreek Hill speed or something, you know, not probably that fast, but some kind of speed. Sammy Watkins speed would probably be more the average of what you'd want for what people think you need, but you don't. I mean, if you know how to play the position and do the right things, you're putting yourself in a better position right away.
If you run a crisper, tighter route compared to a guy that has more speed, you're still going to be further down the field because you made the route, caught the ball in the right position.
Yeah, because I don't have to worry about, if I'm Aaron Rodgers, I don't have to worry about letting this guy catch up to it with his speed.
Right.
I'm going to put the ball where it needs to go because he's going to be there.
Either anticipation, I can trust him. He's going to make his break. I mean, I saw a play yesterday. It was on Twitter, Mahomes with DeMarcus Robinson. They've got a really good relationship. And so he threw a pass, and DeMarcus Robinson hadn't even got into his cut yet. Mahomes threw it, and he knew DeMarcus what he was going to do. DeMarcus then spun, turned, caught the pass, completely fooled the DB, and he got a touchdown in a little scrimmage, a little play. And that's all about trust and relationship. And if DeMarcus Robinson, he can have all the speed in the world, but if he doesn't have that relationship or that timing with the quarterback, or he doesn't know how to come out of that break, out of that route, what good is speed?
Yeah.
Doesn't do you anything. Exactly. Here's another thing. You got great speed. Okay, Jordy Nelson, maybe he's slower than somebody else. Let's just say Jordy Nelson, we know he's slower than Tyreek Hill, so it's about everybody. But if Tyreek Hill has great speed but can't run a great route, or even if he can run a great route but can't catch the ball cleanly, what happens if he comes out of that route Jordy Nelson comes that same route, and Jordy's a second behind. And Tyreek Hill bobbles it, doesn't catch it clean with his hands, let it hit his chest, and Jordy catches it clean with his fingertips. He's already made up that time.
No, yeah.
Already made up that time. Yeah, and that's the difference between a catch and a touchdown in the National Football League.
Yeah.
Or a first down and a fourth down. Pretty good stuff, and really happy for Jordy and his family, and that's pretty awesome, retiring as a Packer yesterday. Have a great day, everyone. We'll talk again tomorrow.
State, regional, and national sports talk on your schedule. The Sports Ticket Podcast. Subscribe via Apple, Google, and TuneIn Podcasts or sunflowerstateradio.com.